Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as The News and Observer, The Week Magazine, The Independent, NewYorkTimes.com, RollingStone.com, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening is brought to us by a group called Golden Smog, entitled Look at You Now. We'll be hearing more about and from Golden Smog later on in today's program. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions today come to us from www.triviaplane.com. First question. Back in 1976, Barry Manilow had a chart-topping song, which he sang but did not write. What was the name of that song? Question number two. Who was the top-selling album artist of the entire 1970s, according to Billboard? The answers to these two trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. The transition section of today's program is brought to us by BGORecords.com, today in rock history. And today is May 1st and May 2nd. What were the number one hits back on May 1st in previous years? Well, on this date back in 1965, it was Herman's Hermits, Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter. And back in 1976, it was the Bellamy Brothers with the number one hit back on May 1, Let Your Love Flow. And births, if you were born on May the 1st, you share a birthday with Judy Collins, Amazing Grace. Back in 1939, she was born on May 1st. And Rita Coolidge, born on May 1st, 1944. And Ray Parker Jr. back in 1954 on May the 1st. And finally, Johnny Colt of the Black Crowes, born on May 1st, 1968. Miscellany in rock news on May 1st, it was 1942, the American War Production Board commandeers all facilities for production of jukeboxes, turning them over to the manufacture of war materials. Back in 1954, on this date, Alan Freed holds his first major show outside his home base at the Armory Theater in Newark, New Jersey. 10,000 see The Clovers, Muddy Waters, and Charles Brown. Back in 1967, on May 1st, it was Elvis Presley marrying Priscilla Beaulieu in Las Vegas. And back in 1968, Al Cooper and Randy Becker leave Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Back in 1969, on May 1st, Bob Dylan and Johnny Cash TV special taped at Grand Ole Opry in Nashville. And back in 1988, on May 1st, it was Dark Side of the Moon finally leaves the U.S. Top 200 after 725 weeks. Back in 1989, a year later, employees called police to a jewelry store in California to report a suspicious-looking person. He turned out to be Michael Jackson, shopping in disguise. Well, what about May 2nd? Well, on May 2nd, back in 1963, the number one hit was From Me to You by the Beatles. And a year later, it was the Rolling Stones, Rolling Stones, on May the 2nd, 1964. Back in 1970, on May the 2nd, Norman Greenbaum, Spirit in the Sky. And finally, in 1998, on May the 2nd, number one hit was Mezzanine by Massive Attack. If you were born on May the 2nd, you share a birthday with Engelbert Humperdinck. Back in 1936, he was born on May 2nd. Hilton Valentine, also born on that day. Back in 1943, Hilton was with the Animals. Goldie McJohn from Steppenwolf, born in 1945 on May 2nd. Leslie Gore, It's My Party, back in 1946 on May the 2nd. and Lou Graham from Foreigner, born in 1950 on May the 2nd. Miscellany in rock history on May the 2nd includes 1957's Elvis Presley records Jailhouse Rock, and back in 1964 on May 2nd, the Beatles' second album reaches number one in the U.S. after only 2 weeks. That was the fastest climb to that date. Back in 1979 on May 2nd, it was The Who playing their first gig since the death of Keith Moon at Rainbow Theater with Kenny Jones on drums. And back in 1979 on May 2nd, the film Quadrophenia opens in London. And finally, back in 1980 on May the 2nd, Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall is banned in South Africa when black schoolchildren adopt it as a protest against their second-rate education system. This final Transitions article is brought to us by Daniel Kreps, RollingStone.com on April the 26th, 2010. Brett Michaels remains in critical condition in an intensive care unit as doctors search for the source of the bleeding in his brain. As Rolling Stone reported, the Poison frontman and Rock of Love star was rushed to an undisclosed hospital last Thursday, April 22nd, after complaining of an excruciating headache, which the rocker compared to getting hit in the head with a baseball bat over and over again, a source tells People. Medical tests revealed that Michaels was suffering from bleeding at the base of his brain stem. As of now, Brett remains in ICU under 24-hour surveillance. Further testing this week will help locate the source of the bleeding. The hemorrhage marks Michaels' second health care in as many weeks. While on tour in San Antonio, Texas, Michaels underwent emergency appendectomy surgery. And last year he was injured by a descending set piece at the Tony Awards that left him with a fractured nose. Michaels also suffers from type 1 diabetes and competed on this season's Celebrity Apprentice to raise money and awareness for the American Diabetes Association. Michaels is a great competitor and champion, The Apprentice's Donald Trump said in a statement, and I hope he will be fine. In local rock news, we see this article from the News and Observer, published on April the 17th, 2010. Put down your iPod and turn off your computer. It's annual Record Store Day. The event was started back in 2007 as a way to increase interest in independent record stores that were losing business to online music stores, as well as chains such as Walmart and Best Buy. In the Triangle, those stores include School Kids Records in Raleigh, CD Alley in Chapel Hill, and Bull City Records and Offbeat Music in Durham. School Kids manager Rick Colross expects a big boost in business. Last year, customers were lined up when School Kids opened. We were smacked down the entire day, he said. That's a good thing. It was like Christmas Eve many years ago, he added. More than 1,400 record stores worldwide plan to participate this year, and bands such as R.E.M., Sonic Youth, The Rolling Stones, Bruce Springsteen, Beastie Boys, The Flaming Lips, and Soundgarden are releasing exclusive records. Some of the excitement is driven by fans over 30 who are buying more vinyl records again, Colross said. This next article was published in the Washington Post back on January 22nd, 2007. Same old song, but with a different meaning. Another Saturday night and I ain't got nobody. I've got some money 'cause I just got paid. Now how I wish I had someone to talk to. I'm in an awful way. It came to him unbidden, that song from his college days. Only now it meant something completely different. There was a man on a stretcher before him, draped in a poncho. Blood dripped off the end of the stretcher, the only sign of life from a lifeless body. It was 1967. But Howard Sherp had already decided that the war in Vietnam was pointless, that the dead man before him had died for nothing. Sherp felt lonely, but not the same way he felt back in college when he didn't have a date on a Saturday night. He felt alone, existentially alone. In his mind, he heard Sam Cooke's voice, but the lyrics were different. Another Saturday night, and I ain't got nobody. I got all bloody and feel some pain. I just want to get the hell out of here. I'm in an awful way. Nearly 40 years later, Sherp needs to hear only a few bars of the song to be transported back to Vietnam, where he served as a medic attached to the 4th Infantry Division. The music brings the sights and sounds and smells roaring back. He can even see a cigarette in his hand that is splotched with blood, the dead man's blood. "What I feel is the sense of all of this was in vain. It was for nothing," said Chirp, 62, of Madison, Wisconsin. "That sense of loss." Chirp's experience is both unique and universal. That moment in Vietnam was highly personal, but the experience of having a tune bring to mind a powerful memory is something everyone can relate to. For neuroscientists, this raises a question. How is it that music connects people to faraway places and events from long, long ago? Music hooks deep into emotions and memories in ways that words do not. In fact, Sherp is contributing to a project that aims to get at a history of the Vietnam War through the music of the era. At the University of Wisconsin, scholar Craig Werner and Vietnam vet Doug Bradley have found that music is a highway into veterans' memories of the war. "Words are tied up in politics," says Werner, who is in charge of the Afro-American Studies Department. "When we talk about wars, it becomes an issue of liberal ideology versus conservative ideology, hawks versus doves. You are for it or against it. For the guys who were there, the words don't fit the complexity of the experience." What music does is reach down into parts of our brain. It opens networks and pathways that you can't get to via language, he added. For neuroscientists, the power of music poses a puzzle. McGill scientist Robert Zatori once hypothesized that because music is abstract, it must activate parts of the brain that process abstract ideas, areas that developed relatively recently as humans evolved from apes. But when Zatori asked people to listen to their favorite pieces of music, as he also ran brain scans on them, people selected whatever kinds of music sent chills down their spine. He found that music activated very ancient parts of the brain. "Because music was abstract, we thought it would activate higher levels of cortex," he said. "Instead, we got this very ancient system, which is usually involved in biological reward. What we found, in a nutshell, is when people experienced chills, there was a huge range of activity all over the brain. It lit up like a Christmas tree." Music seems to activate pleasure networks that are typically activated by food, water, and sex. Why would music have the same effects on the brain as biological experience integral to survival? The article skips down. Trammell argued that the sounds and grunts widespread in the animal kingdom set the stage for the human brain to appreciate music. If music grew out of nonverbal communication, and nonverbal communication is essential to survival in much of the animal world, it would make sense that music should hook deep into the brain. "For social species, such as humans," Trammell said, "music can bind groups together. In a tribal courtship dance, the other members of your group who share that same experience can also relate to it through music," he said. So music is iconic. There are wedding songs and funeral songs. You would never play a wedding song at a funeral. A culture depends on such associations. Werner, who was part of a band, they used to play at Colorado's Fort Carson base during the Vietnam War, said the issue of music always comes up around veterans. But as he started researching his book, which is to be called We Gotta Get Out of This Place, Music and Experience of Vietnam Vets, he found that songs popular among troops in the field were not always the ones popular on the home front. Music by the Doors, for example, was huge on campuses back home, and even in Saigon, but not out in the field where the battles raged. Some of the psychedelic music was more popular in Saigon than in Khe San, Werner said. Creedence Clearwater Revival was always popular with vets, as was that old sailor's anthem, The Beach Boys' Sloop John B., Martha and the Vandellas' hit Nowhere to Run, and the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter were others. As with Sherp and Sam Cooke's Another Saturday Night, Werner said the vets often took away their own meanings from songs. The lyrics of the Sloop John B., Why Don't They Let Me Go Home, This Is the Worst Trip I've Ever Been On, came to be about wanting to leave Vietnam. Aretha Franklin's Chain of Fools was about a relationship gone bad. 5 long years I thought you were my man, but I found out I've just a link in your chain. But for many vets, especially blacks, Werner said it became a song of disillusionment after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. Why, these soldiers asked themselves, were they being asked to fight for freedom in a distant land when their own country had allowed a leader who fought for their freedom to be murdered? The lyric is, one of these mornings the chain is going to break, Werner said. One guy said he thought the song was about the chain of command and how it was going to break. Okay, then who is this group that opened today's program and will close it as well? Golden Smog. Well, according to this iTunes album review, we see the following. Golden Smog brought Craig Johnson of Run Westy Run, Greg Lewis of the Jayhawks, and Dan Murphy of Soul Asylum, and cast them among a rotating crew that included Jayhawks bassist Mark Perlman, big stars Jody Stevens, the Honey Dogs' Noah Levy, and Uncle Tupelo Wilco's Jeff Tweedy, for 2 albums of unpretentious country rock. In step with the emerging alt-country movement of the 1990s, Golden Smog echoed the sweet sorrow of the Byrds' Gene Clark and Graham Parsons, the roughshod country approximations of 70s-era Rolling Stones, and the loose folk blues anarchy of the Faces, all while forging their own distinct path. Lots of pure joy to spread around. And from Wikipedia, we see this about Golden Smog. It's a loosely connected group of musicians, arguably a supergroup, comprised at various times of members of Soul Asylum, The Replacements, Wilco, The Jayhawks, Run Westy Run, The Honey Dogs, and Big Stars. The group took their name from the name of a Flintstones character, which in turn was a parody of singer Mel Torme's nickname, The Velvet Fog. First incarnation, 1989 to 1999. The group first came together under the name Golden Smog in the Minneapolis era in 1989. The band was conceived as a country rock reaction to the punk and hardcore music that dominated the Twin Cities musical scene at the time. Eventually, Golden Smog became something of a fixture at local clubs, where they would play a handful of shows annually, consisting almost entirely of cover songs. So let's take a listen to some of this Golden Smog. We'll start off with one called 5-22-2. That's when I told you 5-5-5-22-2. Did you ever feel the way? Now we'll hear a snippet from their song, I Can.
Outside the cold, it broke me. wishing a friend.
And now we'll hear a snippet from their tune called You Make It Easy. They will also close out today's program with Cure for This, but first, this article by David Frick. Plastic Ono Band return with Eric Clapton, Paul Simon in Brooklyn, published in RollingStone.com on the 17th of February 2010. Just before the final song of Yoko Ono's first performance in four decades with founding members of the Plastic Ono Band at the Brooklyn Academy of Music on February 16th, her son Sean told a short story. At sound check that day, Sean remarked to guitarist Eric Clapton that he had never played slide guitar before and wanted to know how Eric and Sean's father John played slide on the early chaotic Plastic Ono Band records. Clapton replied that, at the time, he had no idea what he was doing. Yoko returned to the BAM crowd with a coquettish grin. "I knew what I was doing," she cracked. Then she leaped into the white noise boogie of Don't Worry, Kyoko, from 1969's Live Peace in Toronto, with rusted shrieks and air raid siren whoops, as Sean and Clapton played twin-grinding slide guitars over a steady, thundering rhythm section. Original Plastic Ono bassist Klaus Voormann and drummer Jim Keltner, who played on John and Ono's 1972 album Sometime in New York City. Coming 2 days before her 77th birthday, We Are Plastic Ono Band was a two-set review of Ono's musical life, with the first half focused on her new album, Between My Head and the Sky. The second part featured friends and disciples performing songs from her previous records, as far apart in temper and touch as Mulberry, a worldless memoir of Ono's World War II childhood in Japan, in raw, ecstatic yelps to the free guitar discord of Sonic Youth, Thurston Moore and Kim Gordon, to Bette Midler's canny rearrangement of Yes, I'm Your Angel, from Double Fantasy into a saucy sister of Making Whoopee. You could almost hear the clinking of martini glasses amid the brass and penthouse party piano. The article skips down and ends with this. The evening ended with Ono and Sean leading a full cast sing-along to Give Peace a Chance. But the audience gave its own encore too, a spontaneous rendition for Ono of Happy Birthday. Her Yes piece had come to life. In contemporary rock news, we see this article printed in Entertainment Weekly on the 26th of March, 2010. Train's surprising pop hit by Simon Vosek Levinson. With sing-along ready single Hey Soul Sister hitting the top 10 of Billboard's Hot 100, the formerly faded rock hitmakers Train are once again running at full steam. Lead singer Pat Monahan explains their resurgence. Number one, the slump. After dominating radio with 2001's Drops of Jupiter and 2003 Calling All Angels, Train struggled to find another smash. "We all lost touch with how fun it is to be us," says Monahan. "When you aim to have a hit and then you don't, you feel like you failed." Number two, the hiatus. After 2006, For Me, It's You sold just 277,000 copies, according to Nielsen SoundScan, the band took a 3-year break. I made a solo record, 2007's Last of Seven, said Monahan. That album didn't take off either. I needed to get that done in my life, plus I needed a break from this group. Number three, Back on Track. The band's latest CD, Save Me San Francisco, came out in October to little fanfare. Then Hey Soul Sister got a boost when the group performed it on CSI New York in December, and soon it was soaring. All I know is that we decided to make music that we loved and made us feel good as opposed to sounding like a hit. Number four, finally, Next Stop. Train are touring through August, and Monahan hopes to drop another single, most likely, if it's Love, or the title track, soon. And if it's not a hit, I definitely enjoy having something on the radio, he says. I have to be careful, though. Money does not transfer into happiness. In that same issue of Entertainment Weekly, we see these reviews. The Bird and the Bee, Interpreting the Masters, Volume 1, a tribute to Daryl Hall and John Oates. This cover disc was titled Guiltless Pleasures before a last-minute switch, which hints at sensitivity over whether H&D count as camp or classic. Either way, it's wink-free pop bliss. The arrangements update the likes of Maneater, yet Inara George's intimate voice makes the almost sound like an unplugged style revelation. We can go for that. Chris Williman gives this a B+ and says, download these, Kiss on My List, and Heard It on the Radio. Then this review on Jamie Cullum, The Pursuit. Cullum kicks things off with just one of those things which seems intended as a message to his fans. The fling he's saying goodbye to is jazz. Sure enough, the rest of the album bears zero resemblance to that transitional opener. Instead, think Ben Folds' brand of guitarless, percussive, piano rock, with an occasional house beat thrown in. The Michael Bublé, A Verse Among Us, are in for a very pleasant revelation, given a B+, by Chris Willman. He said, download these, don't stop the music, and music is through. This final article is from Felicia R. Lee, published on April 18, 2010, NewYorkTimes.com. Rolling Stone song gets a hearing. An unheard Rolling Stone song, Plundered My Soul, recorded for a 1972 album but never released, was issued as a limited edition single in honor of Record Store Day in Britain on Saturday, an annual event celebrating independent record stores. The song, recorded during sessions for the band's Exile on Main Street, was left to languish in the vaults, BBC News reported, but was rediscovered when the group was preparing for a May 18th reissue of the album. Plundered My Soul will be one of 10 bonus tracks on the deluxe edition of the reissue, Reuters reported, which will include the never-before-heard songs Dancing in the Light, Following the River, and Pass the Wine. So, how did you do on the trivia questions? What 1976 chart-topping song did Barry Manilow sing but not write? Ironically, it was I Write the Songs. And who was the top-selling album artist of the 1970s according to Billboard? That was Elton John. I can see you in the summertime. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.